I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Today's show is brought to you by Amazing FBA's mentoring program. So I'm kind of sponsoring my own show. I just wanted to briefly tell you about the mentoring program because it's about to go away at its current price point and in its current form. The mentoring program is there very simply to get you launched, like pretty much everything I do for the more, you know, early days sellers, apart from the 10K Collective, which is obviously for people doing very, very well and ambitious to scale. Everything else I do is really geared to helping you get launched with your first private label product within probably 6 months, maybe 9 months if you're really busy and have other projects on the go. So if you want to work with me for £300 a month for two 90-minute sessions plus email support, that is the current offer. I'm going to take one more person on, maximum two, if the other candidate is really, really special and looks like a really great person is going to succeed. Either that or by the end of June, one of those, whichever comes first. Then after that, I'm going to yank the mentoring program at that price point. And when it goes back up, it's going to be part of a bigger, more powerful package, including an online course, which I'm very excited about. And it's going to be at least £500 a month, probably more, because I'm putting a higher value on my time because I realize opportunity cost is a real cost. And hopefully you realize that as well. So if you value your time, there are three things you need to have to even apply for mentoring. You need at least £5,000 in inventory money. That's not to cover your training costs with me. That's additional, but just for inventory, 20 hours a week to devote to building a business, and 6 months of your time to devote to it as well. Otherwise, I think you're just wasting your time and I won't take you on because I don't want to take your money for the sake of it. I want to take your money only in exchange for great value and you creating your business, finally getting off the ground. So amazingfba.com/mentoring if that interests you. Otherwise, on with the show. Thanks for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Today, I am interviewing Paul Miller of Next Level Licensing about the very interesting possibilities opened up, new world really of opportunities opened up by licensing. And we talked in the last episode about why you should bother doing it. You know, is it possible to get started on a lower level? And it is. You don't have to go straight to Disney or somebody, although that is now the sort of person that Paul is in conversations with these days, or the sort of corporation, I should say. But now we want to dig a bit more into the nuts and bolts. So for those of you who are interested in knowing more about it, stick around. So first of all, Paul, welcome back to the show. And let's talk about this whole thing of you got a phrase that you used a minute ago. You've got this anatomy of a license structure. Can you talk us through how that all works?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me back, Michael. Looking forward to digging in. I just call it the anatomy of a license. People want to know what are the basic terms of a license? And I'm talking about what's included in the license, the basics. That you have to negotiate as part of the license so that you can get a better idea of what's involved in it. I have a list kind of in front of me that I go through with everybody, so I'm just going to go through it quickly with you. The first thing is, what period of time does it cover? So that's the term, 1 to 3 years, 3 to 5 years, however long. I think a three-year term is kind of an average. Right, and then you have a very clear description of the licensed property that you're going to license. So you can imagine, it's not going to be, for example, if you're going to license something from the movie Frozen, it's the description of property isn't just going to be Frozen, because there are a lot of characters within Frozen, right? So there are landscapes and different characters, so it's going to be very specific as to exactly what the licensed property is going to be, and then how you're going to apply that. What product are you going to apply it to? Are you making a coffee cup? Are you making a can opener? It's going to be very specific in the license as to what you're allowed to do with that property. And then we're going to talk about what the territory is. Is this US only, UK only, international? That would be the geographic territory. But you're also going to want to define the sales channels that you're allowed to sell in. Is it all online? Is it wholesale? What distribution channels are you going to sell in? So those are all things that just have to be negotiated. and addressed in the license. Then you're going to get to one of the big ones that everybody wants to know. What's the compensation? In other words, how is the licensor going to get paid? No, we didn't say this in our first interview, but I wanted to explain to you that there are two big reasons why licensors would want a license. Obviously, they're going to receive a royalty or some kind of payment at the sale of that product, but it's also about branding for them. They want to have, they want to build this brand building for them. They want to have the product out in the stores, online, wherever. So it's brand building and a source of revenue for them. But how does that compensation look? Is it a royalty percentage, which in most cases it is? What is the percentage? And does that same percentage last over the entire term of the agreement? And what is the minimum guarantee? And this is a big one. Minimum guarantee is a number that the that is negotiated, which is the minimum royalty that you must pay to the licensor, whether or not you sell 1 or 1 million. There's a minimum number. So even if you don't produce the product in general, you're going to be obligated in a legal agreement to that minimum guaranteed royalty, which is usually a percentage of, well, let me take a step back. The advance is a percentage of the minimum royalty, which we're going to get to. So the minimum royalty is what they put out there as your minimum. And it just depends on the market and who you're dealing with. You know, my first product, we had no minimum guarantee with the What If Monster that we discussed about earlier. But you're not going to probably have any sizable licensor who's not going to require a minimum guarantee. Next is the advance. The advance is what you probably pay at signing, and that's an advanced portion of your minimum guarantee. And probably your head is swimming right now, but
okay.
So let's just say that the minimum guarantee on the contract. I'll go through an example for
you. Because I was going to say that's part of the reason.
Yeah, let me get through the terms real quick. There's the advance, and then there's also exclusivity, whether or not you are the only, you know, person using their property on your product. Can they have other manufacturers making similar items? So exclusivity is usually hard to get, but it's a possibility. And then the other parameter that you'd want to talk about is marketing. Are you required to, and sometimes the licensor will require you to do specific marketing of this item. Okay, so those are the basic terms, you know, if you're kind of looking for a glossary, and I can explain it to you if you want to take the next step, we can kind of go through an example.
Yeah, an example is really, really handy because I think when things become more concrete, it's a little bit easier to grasp them really probably. But also, is there a place where have you got a place where you've got a nice sort of neatly done list of this that we can just kind of read down? So just so we can know what it is we're looking for, just a like tick list of the glossary that you just covered.
The basic terms are in the free course that I offer at nextlevellicensing.com.
Excellent. So folks, if you want to get access to that, we're going to put that into the show notes at amazingfba.com/PaulM for Miller. And we'll put links in there because I think it's going to be very helpful for people to be able to see a list like that because it's quite a lot to take in. So yeah, it's quite a lot. It doesn't sound as horrendous as I imagined it might do once you got lawyers involved, no offense to the legal profession, but they have a habit of making things complicated. I say this with the greatest love and respect, and my dad was a lawyer, but I mean, they like to make things complicated, and I still fall into that myself sometimes. So talk us through an example, and let's keep it as simple as possible. So we got the term of the agreement. You say 3 years is average. Let's pick something and take it through.
Okay, absolutely. And I just want to make a play off of your point a moment ago. You do need an attorney. And that's one of the things that you have to consider. There's a significant investment in an attorney or consultants to get into licensing, but I wouldn't sign any kind of licensing agreement without having an attorney look at it. And there are certainly plenty of attorneys who specialize in licensing. So let's just take an example, and I'm going to go off the top of my head here and go back to our children's play tent, for example. Okay, and let's just call it Disney as the licensor, and you know, you are the licensee. So the term of the agreement, we're going to say, is 3 years in this example. The description of the property would be, we talked about Frozen, for example, the movie Frozen, and you're going to use the main character, Elsa, I think it is. I'm not a huge fan, but I think it's Elsa. Allowed use will be, you're allowed to use Elsa image, these images on this product, the children's play tent. And that's you're going to specify what product it actually is. Of course, you know, we're going to get into the whole development cycle of how that is approved once you do that, but that would be the allowed use. The distribution and territory would be where you're allowed to sell it, both geographically and in what type of sales channels. The royalty percentage, let's just say that it might be 10%, and that's usually on wholesale, or that's the way most of the big licensors work, on a wholesale deal. But since we're direct to consumer, we're going to have a different percentage rate. You may have three different or multiple royalty percentages based on how you're selling, whether you're selling wholesale, direct to consumer, or FOB. But for this conversation, let's just say it's a 10% royalty direct to consumer. So for every, if you're selling that play tent for $20, every sale, you've got to send them $2. Real simple. Okay.
Okay.
The minimum guarantee is going to be how many royalty dollars they want you to guarantee for that over the life of the contract. So it wouldn't be too crazy to say they wanted, on a big licensor, might want $50,000 minimum guarantee over 3 years.
Yeah.
Okay. You can get a lot lower minimum, so don't let that scare you away.
Right.
But those are, if you're talking to the big players, they're going to want big dollars. But let's just use, for this example, $50,000. We could use $10,000 on a smaller, different license. It's no problem at all. So $50,000, the minimum guarantee over 3 years at the 5% rate. So I'm sorry, the 10% rate that we talked about. So that 10%, all the royalties over 3 years would have to total up to at least $50,000 over the 3 years. Now, and you're going to owe that whether or not you actually sell all those units. If you sell more, you're going to owe more too, because the royalty rate continues on beyond the minimum. Now, there's the advance. So we said that it was a $50,000 guarantee. So the advance usually is somewhere in the area of 25 or 30% of the total guarantee. So the total guarantee is $50,000. You might, let's say, 25% of that, what is that, 12.5,
yeah.
12.5 thousand. You're going to owe that advance at the signing of the contract.
Right. And that's okay, presumably way before you've actually got into manufacturing it. And
exactly, and yes.
Okay, so you've got to have some quite serious capital on your side to be considering this, I guess, if you want to play the big ones.
I started out with my first license, no minimum guarantee, you know, no advance. So it can be done without that. Don't let these big numbers scare you away.
Yeah, what I really like, just before we keep going, I mean, it's great to hear the nuts and bolts and to know the reality. What I really think so important about your story, which is why I always like to get people's actually what they actually do and how it works, is that you didn't start off by looking at all this legal stuff and all these difficult words to understand and this complication and all the money and go, wow, that's just not worth it. You went in there and just got started without knowing what you were doing. And then because you did that, you got a result and went, wow, this is amazing. And then it's worth going through all the pain and stuff. So I just want to emphasize that point, because I think that mentality and that approach is absolutely the one of the people who actually make money, as opposed to look at this thing and then just give up.
A good friend of mine who I took to the licensing show last year is an FBA seller. He did a licensing agreement with the San Diego Zoo. And now his products are in the gift shop at the zoo. And, you know, he can say that this is a product, San Diego Zoo, which again gives you, you know, credibility for your product. If it's like animal related or pet related, something like that. So again, it doesn't have to be overwhelming, but you do. My goal is to let people know what they're getting into before they get into it. Understand the parameters so you can make a decision whether you want to go there or not.
Absolutely. And that's very, very important and very honest of you as well. But I mean, I like the fact that you can start with San Diego Zoo, you said. That's really cool. That just goes to show it doesn't have to be about Hasbro's or the Disney's of the world. Although obviously, you know, if you're involved with those, that can really superpower your business. But so we touched on already some of the reasons why you might want to approach this with, you know, some knowledge and some with your eyes open. What are the other factors that you would put into weighing up whether this is a good business model for people to explore further? Is it likely to be for me or not?
So besides the financial considerations, and there, you know, there are plenty that we have already talked about, and whether or not this is a good way for you to grow your business, take advantage of new distribution channels, as we talked about. I think the other major consideration is the product development process.
Okay. So tell us about the product development process, because obviously that's going to be, it's going to be very key to any kind of product creation, of course.
Right. So we as private label sellers, Amazon sellers, have, depending on the complexity of your product, it can be pretty fast. We can, you know, we've been able to go to market with a product from the concept, you know, to market in 90 days before. That's because I have a small team and we have, you know, designers, and we can knock stuff out. The manufacturers are pretty responsive. We can get things out in the marketplace very quick. Not so when you're dealing with a major license. The reason is a licensor wants to protect that IP along the way, and they want to make sure that, you know, that product, that brand is well represented on your product. So, you know, if the image or the character that you're trying to use, and I keep going back to that because that's the area that I'm in, characters, but we can talk about other kind of types of licensing later. If it doesn't fit on your product, you can't just squish it around and rescale it to make it fit. It has to properly represent that property. So there's a approvals process and design guidelines that you have to follow with each licensor. And although they have some similarities in their approvals process, such as a design guide, each licensor is a little bit different in how they manage their approvals process.
Okay, so you've really got to be prepared to jump through quite a lot of hoops. And presumably this takes a lot more time than a private label license then, because whenever you get more people involved, in my experience, you got twice the number of people, it's like a sort of square rule. In other words, you're sort of the power of two. So in other words, you've got two people involved, it takes four times as long in my experience. And is that roughly your experience as well? How does that look?
Yeah, I think that this is my first time, but I also hired a designer who was familiar with the licensing process. And that's something that I would highly recommend too. If you can find somebody in your industry that has worked with the license, they're going to know to a large extent what may pass the muster and what won't. I'll just walk you through the development process real quick. It starts with a design mock-up, basically. Let's go back to the George Foreman Grill, although I wasn't part of that process. It would start out with the design and a layout of how they're going to use the George Foreman name and how that product is going to look. And so you're going to get some kind of initial approvals. You're going to have to submit that based on design guidelines that the licensor provides. So they will provide you. You don't have to come up with all new images. They're going to provide you some guidelines, say these are the fonts that we use, these are the colors that we use, these are the elements of the property and so forth. You're going to apply that to your product and basically propose it to them. Okay, how's this look? Do you like this? And they may give you a approval on the design piece of that. And then you have to go make a sample. You go make a sample and send that back to the licensor and go through that approval process again. So they're going to, you know, physically check the sample, and you may have to work through three or four different versions before you have a final approval. Then you're going to do a small production run, and you're going to provide a production sample as well. And that has to be approved. You know, if everything's working right, your production run's going to look the same as your sample product did, right? But it's very important, because the licensor has the ability to pull the product, basically. If you're not following the guidelines, if you gave them a sample that was right on, but you do a production run and the colors are off, they're not going to allow you to put that product in the marketplace.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, if you're used to running like I was, you know, fast and lean and spitting out products left and right, not having, you know, being able to go without an inspection,
yeah,
forget about it. you need to be committed to the process and follow the rules.
Yeah.
You know? And if you don't want somebody else telling you what to do, licensing might not be right for you.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Although what's striking me, I mean, we can dig a bit further into this in a second, but I'm just scribbling on any available bit of paper here, because I think it's always a sign that I've got a good interview, that there's some details that I'm catching when I'm trying to resist the urge to write, because I want to focus on what people are saying. But I'm like, if I don't capture this, I'm going to forget, because there's a lot of value here. But the first thing that strikes me is, this sounds like the sort of product development process we all should be doing anyway, to some degree. In other words, you start off with a concept, you get a professional designer involved, you have a mock-up, you have some kind of approvals, you make a sample that gets approved at that point, you have three or four versions, you get it approved again. I mean, what it's reminding me of is a bit a conversation I had recently, in other words, an interview on the podcast with Ashley Pierce, who's a member of the 10K Collective, who's very much at the early sort of stages, been in the Amazon game about 18 months, but he has an engineering and manufacturing as a mechanical engineering and manufacturing engineering background. And that sounds a bit like the sort of process he's been going through anyway to develop his own product. So sometimes I feel that having to work with other people, although we may resist it as entrepreneurs that like to be freewheeling, and as you say, we sort of spit stuff out and then correct afterwards, actually that discipline that's imposed by working with other people is probably going to result in a better business overall, and certainly a better physical product. Anyway, I mean, what are your thoughts on that, having done it both ways?
I agree 100%. That process is going to force you through to a better quality product in the end. And I mean, it's absolutely required if you're going to do licensing, but it is similar to kind of what we, you know, if you were in product design, if you had studied that, it'd be similar to what you might do in, you know, a regular R&D team.
Yeah, does make sense as well.
I just wanted to add one more thing before I forget it on the development side. You also have to have a factory who can pass a factory audit. And you may not be audited, but you have to keep in mind, in my case, I went to China to find a new supplier to do my licensed goods, because I knew my original supplier didn't have the type of facility and the type of capacity that would pass an audit by a Nickelodeon or Disney. You know, they're looking obviously for quality control, safety, ethical considerations. So if you don't have the factory that might be able to pass that audit, you'll have to keep in mind that you may have to find a supplier who will.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense as well. And again, to be honest, the more serious you are about your own product line, that's a discipline that we should all be putting on ourselves. I mean, quality, we talked in the last episode about the never ever send products out of China without inspection. And then also, yeah, frankly, the consistency of the products. You know, Amazon consumers are used to a fairly slick experience of products. And if they're used to receiving products from Disney or whatever, and they get something from a private labeler that is slightly off in some way, they will judge you by the standards of Disney, even though that might seem unfair. And my experience, we've all experienced that. The one-star reviews sometimes come from what feels, from the seller's perspective, for like a 4.5-star product. And I think that, again, the discipline that's being forced on you, to be honest, sounds like a good one. I mean, having to fly to China to find a new product factory is certainly a pain in the bum. But if you're serious about it, it does sound again like a good discipline. So tell me a bit, and let's zoom back out. You've given us some amazing detail. What's the overall sort of timescale that you personally experienced, or any students of yours have experienced, with this kind of model? Let's take the example of the What If Monster, and also with working with Nickelodeon, the bigger players.
Great. Well, the What If Monster was very fast. I think we had product by the time we started talking about a license to the time that we had that product in the marketplace was around 90 days. So that was, again, very easy. Approval process was simple. Manufacturing was fairly simple also. And negotiation of the contract was simple. And those things are the time eaters, right? Negotiating the contract can take a while because you do have to get attorneys involved. You have to settle on the terms, and then you have to get attorneys involved on both sides. Then there's some negotiation, and then they're signing the contract. So that can take a while. And then, as I mentioned, the development cycle can take a while too. So on the What If Monster side, for us, it was really only about 90 days. But by the time we actually get product to market for Nickelodeon, it was closer in the 6-month range. Yeah, and I think that could be considered fast for lots of people.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems pretty fast. I mean, 90 days to get a private label product out the door from concept to selling is, I would say, pretty swift. Actually, most people seem to average around the 6-month mark for whatever reason. I mean, in theory, it shouldn't take that long. But then one of the differences between theory and practice, as they say, is that in theory, it doesn't take long. And in practice, it does. So I would say you sound like a swift mover anyway. So I could imagine you could quite easily double that number if you're less efficient than you.
Yeah, I would absolutely. I would say that a good range would probably be 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
Especially if your development cycle doesn't go well. We had hit a snag in our development cycle. The licensor, there was one element of the characters. We said, do you want these with or without that element? They said, you don't need that. Well, we got through design stage and sampling stage. But once they got it in their hands, they said, whoa, where's that element we talked about? Well, you said you didn't want it. So they said, yeah, I guess we really do need it. So
oh, God.
Back to design, back to sampling.
Literally right? Back to the drawing board, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Not good. But yeah, as you say, I mean, I guess that is one of the things, isn't it? If you're going to leverage, everything has its cost. And if you're going to leverage somebody else's brand and the power that has, which is very, very real. You've got to, I guess, I always feel that there's a massive payoff between the effort you put into the research, like who your target market is, all the way through the product design and the sourcing process. The more you put the effort in up front, once you launch it, it's going to be easy. So if you're trying to sell a piece of tap from China that is almost the same as anything else, once you put it out in the marketplace, you're going to have to drop the price to the floor and spend like crazy on pay-per-click just to get it to rank on page 5. Whereas once you've got a brand name involved, you're going to have to jump through hoops and sweat blood over the lawyers by the sound of it. But on the other hand, once you put it out in the marketplace, it will zing up the charts if it is in any way a decent product. So I guess the overall system, if you like, it strikes me always that with the, you know, the research, the development, the sourcing and the launching, if you take the thing as a whole, you're going to experience pain somewhere. So you might as well experience it up front and then get the payoff down the line, right?
Yeah, this is definitely an advanced topic, right? Something that we didn't talk about before. One of the things that you need as you're, preparing to find a licensor is you need to show them sales because they don't want to tie up that property with your product without you being able to perform for them. So it's very unlikely, and I've had some folks come to me before who had a concept. Hey, I want to do a particular product with a particular license. And my first question is, do you have any sales? And do you have any track record of being able to manufacture and distribute the product, whether it's selling direct to consumer or not? Because a licensor, again, that's a valuable asset that they have. And in general, they're not going to issue the same license to multiple licensees for the same product. So one manufacturer of the children's play tent, one manufacturer of an umbrella, because they don't like to create competition between those two manufacturers. But as I said before, you're probably not going to get an exclusive, but in general, they kind of pick one manufacturer for a type of product and stick with them.
Yeah, well, in a way, that's very reassuring. Coming back to the main reason, I mean, just to circle back up to sort of wrap this up, really, I think that one of the main points when the entire reason to work with a brand is an existing brand and license their IP, their intellectual property of some form, is really to differentiate and to get ahead over the competition. And if they're actually handing out licenses to everyone in sight, it starts to be very invaluable anyway. So the fact that they are reluctant to do it until you've proven yourself, in a way you could see as a downside, but in a way I see it as it's eliminating most of the competition. So actually, mm-hmm. if you make it to that stage, you basically, you're drawing a moat around your brand that's going to be hard to break.
Mm-hmm. So you know, I'll throw out a really simple way to get into licensing if you're interested. I just came back from the Las Vegas licensing show this year, and the keynote speaker was from Amazon. And, you know, I think you're probably very well familiar with merch, merch by Amazon. And they're heading up a product to make licensed properties available to merch designers.
Ooh.
So, for example, you would be able to go in, if you're approved for that program, and I think it's called Colab, C-O-L-A-B. I'm sure we can find it for your show notes. If you are approved for that program as a designer, you can go to, let's say, I'm thinking about a Cartoon Network, I believe, was one of the property owners. You could go to the Cartoon Network library and use their assets to create a new T-shirt and then submit it to them for approval. And once approved, you're selling that shirt on Amazon. And wow. The royalty and all that is already built into the transaction from Amazon. So you don't have to sign a licensing agreement with anybody.
It's very funny that you should say that, because I was thinking, I mean, I had Chris Green on a while ago talking about merch by Amazon and how it's, you know, the approval process that Amazon has is being speeded up. And he's got a course that he's recently launched on that. And it's such an obvious thing that we're as if you're designing a t-shirt, it basically all you're doing is creating the IP for Amazon and they're doing the manufacturing. So it's the flip side of the whole thing you were talking about. And this is kind of a sort of strange halfway house between the two things. So very much worth exploring. And presumably you would need some track record as a merch by Amazon seller for that.
I think so. I you know, it's already pretty difficult to get a merch account right now. So, I'm assuming that it would take a while to get through that process.
Well, apparently, according to Chris Greener, that it has become a lot easier to get a merch account recently again. Just so it's an interesting heads up. I mean, you might have some IP that you could personally do yourself. Well, it sounds like you've got your hands full anyway. Mm-hmm. But I'm just thinking that actually the whole business of licensing is therefore going to be opened up to people who may have to have some kind of track record, but on a much lower capital requirement than something where you might have to spend, you know, say $12,000 up front just to pay at the time when you write your contract, and then you've got another 6 months or so before you can actually sell products. I mean, the cash flow of that is tough, although the upside is amazing.
Yeah, if you've got a merch account, it costs you nothing.
Yeah, so I mean, that's
except some time in design work.
Yeah, so interesting to reflect that actually there is a pretty easy way in for people if they've got a merch account, so, and a reason to really go for it with your own t-shirt designs as well, is to sort of prove yourself to Amazon and or any of their licensors that they're working with, because that sounds like, again, a potentially very valuable opportunity as well. Although, because of the low barrier to entry, it's going to be very, very competitive. And one of the things that is interesting is to reflect on the fact that because you've had to do your own private label sellings first or some kind of customized product before you could even be taken seriously by a licensor, and they don't hand out licenses like sweets, by the time you've done all that, you're actually in pretty rarefied atmosphere of people who are going to actually have a very sustainable business.
I think you make a great point. You know, you're almost building your licensing portfolio at a very low cost way if you can do it through the merch licensing program.
Yeah, I think it's definitely sounds like something that's worth exploring, especially people who have a design kind of side of it. I mean, in a way, you sound like you're more on the manufacturing and putting the whole things together side. Those who are more on the design side might well find that there's a sort of that is the side to get started with, I suspect, by the sound of it. Now, one more topic I just wanted to cover with you, and then we better let you get back to life with Knowit, because you're giving us a ton of value and really appreciate your time. But that is the different types of licensing, which you mentioned earlier. So one was character, you mentioned. What other forms of licensing can that take?
Sure. So, you know, the entertainment industry really dominates the licensing. As a matter of fact, I read a statistic the other day that 25% of all children's clothes, children's products, are in the licensing category. So entertainment, TV shows, and even one of the guys that was on stage at the conference that I was just speaking about with Amazon was a blogger, basically. He's an online personality. So I'm going to categorize that as kind of entertainment for now, but that takes up the lion's share of, licensing. But there's also housewares is huge, you know, so think about your TV personalities, chefs, for example, Emeril. You go through the houseware aisles, and I teach in my course, you really want to start thinking about licensing, first check in your own house, just walk around your kitchen. So, and look at the products that you have in your kitchen. Most of the time, if they've got a brand name on them, you know, that isn't the manufacturer's name, that's most probably a licensed item. A lot of times you'll actually see when you dig in and you look at the property, you'll see two brands on that product itself. It'll be the license, whatever that is, for example, Nickelodeon, in my case, manufactured by Cozy Phones. So that kind of gives you an idea. We talked about some other areas. Outdoor is a big area for licensing. Outdoor sporting goods, for example. And you can just imagine, walking through the sporting goods aisle at your local Walmart or Target or whatever your big retailer is. Kitchen, as I mentioned, entertainment, some other things that we've talked about already, something as simple as an umbrella, right? A very simple product that you can apply licensing to. So it really, automotive is out there also. The best way to kind of get a feeling for what's out there is to go to the store and look through the aisles. I often do, you know, my Facebook pages, I'll go into a store and take my iPhone out and, you know, do a little Facebook Live about, hey, look at this product I just came across, you know, licensed product. You wouldn't even have thought about it until you see it. Once you get the idea of licensing in your head, licenses start popping up all over the place.
Yeah, it's so interesting that quite a lot of guests that come on and talking about very, very different topics, but one of the common themes is, there's lots of nuts and bolts, but I think it all starts with a way of seeing things and becoming aware of what's already out there. And even as a consumer, your awareness needs to start so you can just perceive how the world works. Because if you don't see how the world works, you can't really operate in it accurately, right? And then one of the things is that nobody makes their own stuff anymore and everything's made in a factory, you know, somewhere, possibly in China. And that applies to Apple as much as anywhere else. I mean, it's right from the high-end products all the way down. And so it's fascinating to see that and then to begin to understand, okay, if we choose to, how to operate within that, how to pull the levers of that world, end up with us benefiting from it. So we better wrap it up there, Paul. It's been such an interesting insight into a very different way of operating, but which also has a lot of commonalities with the private label, you know, pure private label, whatever that means. I mean, you know, we've got to customize to a degree and then it's not just private label anymore, is it? But the whole, some of the disciplines that this imposes on you and the way that ties in with good business practice anyway, but also some of the opportunities that exist. And what particularly excites me is the fact that you and then also a friend of yours have managed to find sort of rather less intimidating people to work with and just get cracking really quite fast. So it says to me that this is an opportunity that is available to more than just the sort of people who are willing to put massive money in and risk in. And it's really something for seasoned sellers to take very seriously as a way to deal with the wave of competition coming at us. So fascinating stuff. Are there other places that, Paul, that people can learn more from you in if they want to dig into this in more detail or connect with you in more detail?
Well, you can always connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to connect with folks there. Just search for me, Paul Miller, and my brand, Cozy Phones, and you can connect with me on LinkedIn. And of course, taking our free course is probably the best way to get into the funnel, if you will. We will be coming out with a paid course eventually, but the free course gives you 90% of the information you need to know whether on to take on licensing as a business strategy.
Excellent. And if you want to get over to amazingfba.com/Paul M, and then we will have links through there if you want to check out the free course as well, which I'm certainly going to be checking out, because this, even if you can't explore something in a direct way, I always think it's very important to become aware of the possibilities out there, because sometimes a light bulb goes on and you connect the dots between a couple of different things. So it's very important to keep exploring, especially if it answers the question of how do I differentiate my product, which is, for any Amazon seller who's been around the block, that is the number one question, right? So I think you provided one answer to that I think is very, very powerful. So Paul, many, many thanks for coming on the show and sharing your Desert Island Discs.
Thanks for having me, Michael. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks so much. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few. Then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.